Hey, good morning. First of all, I want to give a shout out before we get into this Juan Epstein to Squarespace. Squarespace.com, okay? Head over to Squarespace.com. Get your website built just the way Sife's mom is doing it. She's the true spokesperson. Squarespace.com. Use the code Juan Ep. They'll take care of you. And let's get into Juan Epstein. Good morning, Sife.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
I don't know. Good night, maybe?
That's a very good point. Sife, you were supposed to be in studio today. What happened?
Yeah, I got held up with baby duties.
You're telling me that your wife trusts you and you alone with the child?
Yeah. Yeah. Not for long though. I'm waiting for the nanny to show up, but she had to come later.
So, but you're on is she with you right now, the baby?
Yeah.
What does she think about the podcast? Is she excited about Daddy Ostet?
She is very excited. She wants to know how the first hip hop band came about and all his production credits. She's into that shit.
Oh, I figured that she was. So without any further ado, Daddy Ostet from Stetsasonic is in the building.
What up? Woo! What up?
Daddy O!
What up, man?
When I just told Shawnee, I was like, oh, Daddy O's here. And Shawnee looked at me and I was like, Daddy Ostet. And he was like, oh, I thought you were just randomly calling a friend Daddy O. I was like, no, it's the Daddy O. So first of all, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm a little thrown off with the snow, but other than that, I'm cool.
Are you on a specific, it seems like you told me you did Sway and you did Combat Jack.
Yeah.
So you're moving around doing.
That's just me calling you guys personally.
So you, this is.
And that's just you guys doing me favors to do stuff with.
So you reached out to people that you, but you obviously, is there something in particular that you're out and about promoting? Or
yeah, I learned that I probably should have never, I never stopped rapping, but I learned that I probably should have never stopped making records. So I came to this moment last year.
What, where you decided you wanted to?
I just decided that if Led Zeppelin could put out a new album and Megadeth could put out a new album and David Bowie could put out a new album, then if we're supposed to be the golden age of hip hop or whatever the hell people call us.
Why did we stop making albums?
Yeah. And it's just us. It's just my generation. Like, and I'm starting to see the 90s follow it, which I think is kind of sad. But it's just my generation.
The 80s.
Yeah, like Future think he's going to be making records till he's 80.
Right.
Like they're not thinking about stopping.
Right.
It's just us.
Yeah. And because back then it was this thing of like, oh, well, rap's young and that's that. And everyone just accepted it.
Yeah, but I think the other part gets a little weird for me because why should we accept that? Like we shouldn't accept that. We never accepted them saying you're not music, you won't be on the radio, so why do we accept that part? Like that's dumb.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things you didn't accept, but then this one you just take at face value just because they say so.
Yes, it's really super duper duper weird to me. So I thought about it, and so this year I'm releasing an album a quarter. Probably next year I'll probably do the same. I'll do it until it doesn't make sense, and then I'll probably just do like two albums.
Before we start at the beginning, which is of course what we're gonna do. What have you been doing? What is the main thing that you've been doing over the last, you know, since your glory days in the hip hop game?
You know, I caught the technology bug, so I've been on the tech side for a lot of years. I've been doing social media. I've been building platforms.
And where have you been? Where do you live?
I live in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
And how long you been in Atlanta?
I've been there 7 years.
Okay.
But I started working with startups and software companies as soon as I got there.
All right. So let's start way back at the beginning. Where are you born?
Brooklyn, East New York.
East New York, Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And
Gunsmoke.
Sorry, Sife. Sife, yeah, exactly. You know that I blow things like this. And when did you... Who was the first influence on you when it came to hip-hop music? Or was it just the influence of being in East New York at the time?
No, it had to be Melly Mel. When it came to hip-hop music, it had to be... It was flashing him. Yeah, it was a flash tape. And once I heard that flash tape, I was like, what the hell is that?
Was there one flash tape that was the tape?
No. But there was two types of tapes they used to make. One was a condenser mic tape that you just put your box in the corner at the party.
Right.
And then the other ones were the practice tapes that they plugged it in so it sounded like
better
this sounded.
Because they were practicing.
Yeah, and so it was one of those practice tapes.
So it was actually a good tape.
Yeah, it was a good sounding tape.
And do you remember where you got it from?
I remember it was Eric. Anybody that knows Brooklyn, the history of Brooklyn, It was Eric Tweedy's little brother that played it for me.
Huh. And when you
Eric who?
Eric Tweedy. Look him up.
Look up Eric Tweedy, Syfe. Jay-Z
should know who Eric Tweedy is because he's from Marcy.
And were you instantly hooked?
It bugged me out, mostly that echo chamber thing. That to the beat, y'all, you don't stop, keep. And I was like, what the hell? I just want to do that. Because I thought it was the coolest thing I ever heard.
Right.
And so what's the first step you take in music into actually trying to be involved in music in some way?
It's not even really music. Like, the first step I take is I try to get more tapes, right? And then, you know, you listening to the tapes, and I guess kids do the same thing now. You know, you kind of mimicking and seeing whether or not you can do it and all of that. And then the steps for us was contests. We even got our deal through a contest. So that was the steps.
Okay, but what about meeting the rest of the guys? Like, who did you meet?
Well, Delight was one of my best friends.
Okay.
And then we just kept, like, I don't know, man. It was like walking down the street and grabbing people. We just kept adding people on.
And who was next? Do you remember the order of who got added?
Wise was the next. Well, it was used to be the Stetson Sonic 3 MC, so Crown Supreme was in the group first. My man Crown, still a DJ here. But Crown, he got into this thing with his girl. He didn't want to practice. So me and Delight went back to being me and Delight and with Wise, because Wise was real nice. Like, he was nicer than Buffy. He could do all the stuff that Buff could do, but then he could do all these scratches and stuff with his mouth. So we started doing routines with him.
Straight from the mouth of Wise.
Hey, Daddy, yo.
Yeah. So we started doing that. And then we met Fruquan. And when we met Fruquan, I was like, yo, Delight, if we don't put him in a group, he's going to come back to destroy us. And then, you know, we just kept it. We met Prince Paul at Brevoit Day. He was DJing on the side, and we met him at Brevoit Day. He thought we was going to beat him up, but we was just asking him to be in a group.
Yeah, what was this stupid Long Islander doing in Brooklyn?
Yo, he said it was his grandmother, I think, lived over there. So he got
right.
a chance to, like, play. He was like a little boy, like 16, killing, like, Caravan Liquid, like, just hurting it. And, you know, we added him. DBC was a keyboard player. We knew his brother. We added him. A little later on, we put Bobby in to play the drums.
So how do oftentimes we hear the story start with a contest, right? There's a thing. What routine did you guys have, a set routine already before you went to the contest?
Yeah, we did. I mean, but it was different because it was Mr. Magic, the late Mr. Magic's contest. So this was borough wide. So every week we had to be prepared. So, you know, we would battle in each borough, and then it culminated in Coney Island, and we ended up being one of the finalists there.
And who else did you, is anyone else?
I don't even remember the rest of those groups. Like, I don't.
So no one, and also, were any of the guys at this point, Wise, Fruquan, anyone already popping in their own way?
No. I mean, well, neighborhood-wise, like, Wise was popping because he was a dope beatbox, and then Fruquan lived right there in Brookline, so, you know, just in terms of, you know, going out and parties in Brookline, he was, but nothing major.
And so what's the next step after the contest?
Next step after this contest is, this is one of the stories I wanted to tell Syfe. The next step after the contest is we win.
Okay.
And then, so we're supposed to go to Sugar Hill Records.
All right.
And we go up to Sugar Hill. And when we go up to Sugar Hill, Tyrone Williams takes us up. And the Furious Five is outside with a bunch of rented Benzes throwing Frisbees.
Frisbees.
Yeah, throwing Frisbees. Okay. Not Joey, Leland Robinson, that's the little one. The Supra was hot. He's shining the wheels to his Supra. Bobby Robinson Sr. comes driving up, you know what I mean? And he's got a two-door Benz. And then Melly Mel comes from the back with two girls underneath his arm. What's up, Daddy, yo? Like, they totally staged it for us to want to sign the Sugar Hill.
No way.
Yo, I swear. I'm like, yo, come on, man.
Now, at the time, did that bug you out? Are you like, I can't believe these guys actually care about and want us to sign here?
I mean, we...
Or you knew you were popping.
We wanted to sign the Sugar Hill because it was the biggest rap record label at the time. And then remember, you know, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five for us was like heroes. So Flash and them was over there. So we wanted to go, but it was whack. And then the contract was whacker because it was like...
And you had a lawyer at the time already?
We did. It came back like 2% retail. Like it was 4% hotel. It was wholesale. It was like 2.5%.
But you make no money.
Yeah. I mean, it's not only, it's not like everybody made money, period. But we made a lot, we would have made a lot less at Sugar Hill.
So, and I'm guessing, does Prince Paul tie into you guys ending up at Tommy Boy, or is that how Prince Paul ends up with a relationship at Tommy Boy? What's the order?
We go, we sign, we go with Tommy Boy because it's a, you know, it's a B-boy label.
And what year are we talking about? Like 84, 85?
84.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, the Tommy Boy situation is Afrika Bambaataa.
Right.
That's the big Tommy Boy rap situation. Yeah, they had exactly. A couple other things, yeah, but that's the main thing.
That's it.
Okay. And their deal was better?
Well, their deal was definitely better than Sugar Hill deal. But for us, it was, you know, at expense of sounding corny, it was more visionary. You know what I mean? Like they kind of understood where we wanted to go. They didn't stop us from making the stuff we wanted to make. And, you know, we didn't see facade. We just
when you did when you were doing the contest, was it the full band?
No. It was just most of those contest dates were just Delight Wise and me.
Just rapping.
Yeah, Fruquan was actually in the audience, but we didn't let him because we used to practice every day. So he wasn't part. He was in the group, but he wasn't part of the routines yet because he didn't learn the routines yet. So we used to just do it ourselves.
So you get to Tommy Boy. Who's the A&R at Tommy Boy?
Who is A&R? And I don't even know. We're dealing with Monica and Tom all the time.
Right.
So we're not really dealing with like A&R people. I mean, Steve Knutson's there, but he's not doing A&R. Rod Houston's there, but Rod's not doing that. Laura Hines is doing, I don't even remember who was doing A&R.
And so what's the first thing you ended up working on for Tommy Boy?
So we had a record called Stetsasonic, and that became Just Say Stet.
Can we talk about the name Stetsasonic?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
So Delight comes up with that name, but in the very beginning, we kind of was taught by this group of guys out of Long Island called the Stetson Brothers, who used to be on my block, but they was hustling. But, you know, they didn't want to rap no more. But when they talked to me, they were like, yo, who's your favorite rapper? I was like, Flash and them. They was like, man, fuck Flash and them, yo. You know, pudging them, kill flashing them with this style we got and all that. And I'm like, nobody ever beat flashing them. I wish I could find a tape. And then one day, I wish I could find a tape now. They let me hear this tape of the Stetson Brothers just ripping into Mel and them's ass. Like with this, that same style that you hear me do today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that so that was, we started off as the Stetson Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we changed it to Stetsasonic when we decided that those guys wasn't going to go with us. Because we were like, yo, come with us, man. You know, we starting to make some moves. We starting to do some things. And he's like,
nah, we're going to stay here on the block.
Yeah.
Probably worked out for the best. You guys already had a lot of people, let's be honest.
Yeah, there was already a lot, yeah.
No, we did.
Now, is Prince Paul already involved?
So Paul, like I said, we grabbed Paul from the Brevoit houses on Brevoit Day. And we grab Paul. Paul is just involved because of us. You know, we love him. We tell him what we want him to do. He ends up being like, I don't know, 15 times more than what we ever expected because he's super young. But his musical knowledge is like who the hell is this kid? Like with these Funkadelic records and all of this stuff, right? And then he's got a drum machine and he's working it and he's doing things that I saw Jazzy Jeff do later on.
Right.
Like that Rock the Bells and all that. I saw Paul do all that first. As a little boy. Wow. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. So, yeah, no, he just gets involved with us, you know, starts doing the music. What ends up happening with De La is he comes to me one day and say, yo, I got this record, but I got no relationships. You know everybody. So I'm going to give you this record, man. You think you could get us a deal? And he plays me Plug Tune and I fall out.
And you brought that to Tommy Boy.
I brought it to three labels. I had two better deals for De La on the table, but Monica moved so fast. Like, she wrote a contract in the bathroom, I guess.
And they got it. Yeah, they got it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Cypher, you have anything over there, by the way? Because I don't want to. I know I don't want to talk over you constantly because you're with your baby.
I'm in listening.
So, all right. So you guys do this first record, and what's the reaction to it? And is it a single? It's a promo single.
So we do. It's a single. I mean, I don't know if there was any such thing as a promo single then, but it's a single. It's called Just Say Stat, and we get all the critical acclaim that we want. You know, we known in Brooklyn. The underground little stations, the Awesome 2 and WHBI. Well,
this is 84,
right in there, yep.
This is still before BDP, Kane, Rakim. This is like before.
Yeah, this is before the golden age. We all are in that same. But to their credit, Syph, we're all in that same building stage. They just didn't, you know, some of them didn't get their deals through contests, so they're not really running that particular circuit, but we're all building at that time.
Just Say Stat.
Well, they're around.
Yeah, they're around.
Discog says Just Say Stat, the single comes out in 1985.
Right.
There was a 7-inch promo, mm-hmm. and there's a real single and a 12-inch promo, and then...
Ask him if he have any 7-inches.
I do.
You do?
Yeah, they're sitting in storage here. Yep. I got two.
You have two?
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk later, Seth. Daddy-o. There's none on Discogs available. We'll get to the one that I do have. I only have one of your records. And the album On Fire comes out in 86.
Right.
And how much like acclaim does that get in New York?
I mean, we win. We win. We do this Ghost Etza record. It's a hot record on the street. You know, it's a bigger record than Rikers Island. it's the heyday, you know. So now we're coming out of the Roxy and into Latin Quarter and into Payday and into what's that club that was there for 3 weeks? Union Square.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so we get all the acclaim because those records are playing. Faye's playing, Jesse Stets Stets playing, and Ghost Stets.
And Ghost Stets is the biggest one, correct?
Yeah, Ghost Stets ends up being the biggest one. Mm-hmm.
Ghost Stets is with the Go Brooklyn drums at the end, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that record, that's like a Funk Flex Red Alert.
I was
like,
say.
That's like a Red Alert record that Funk Flex used to just cut up because you could tell Flex wanted to be around in that era because when he plays those records, he knows them by heart because he was practicing with those records.
Right,
you know,
right. That's when he was really into it. Here, give you a little taste of Ghost Stets. Oh, this is Flex all day. This is how I know this record is Flex.
Right.
Brace yourself for the awesome and rare. The real, the right, and dynamite is in the atmosphere. As there's a time and place for everything that's under the sun.
So there you go. That's Ghost Stets.
There's like a secret, silent, cold war between DJ Enough and Funkmaster Flex about who cuts that record better because Enough is from Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? Like, and like when either one of them cuts that up on the radio or a club, I know they have the other one's face in their mind, like cutting it up better than the next.
Now, by the way, that it's such a classic to cut. Now, you guys got right back at it. Did you go on tour off the first album or no?
We did. I don't know if you know any of the stories about Dave Funkenklein.
Dave Funkenklein is a one ep name. Yeah. He's like the spirit animal of one ep.
So Dave is like, he's very special. Like he can see talent like 16 miles away. Like, it doesn't even seem like he's gonna know, but he does know, right? He always knows. And he just looks at us and says, I'm taking you guys on the road. And we go to Amsterdam first. Like, we learn how to work our show out in Europe where we got all this time to do shows. So we go on the road and we work out this, you know, he takes us on the road. He takes Ultra for a couple of dates, you know, a couple of people he's throwing in and out of there. And we get the show together, and by the time we come back to New York and do the Def Jam tour, we're ready.
So you guys and Ultra Mags were out very early together?
Oh, yeah.
Was Cool Keith a lunatic back then?
I mean,
and I said, you know, a loving way, of
course. Here's my Cool Keith line. So We go to Europe this one year, the same year I'm talking about. And every time Keith gets on the radio, he tells everybody, I'm the best MC in the world. The best MC in the world is me, Cool Keith. And so we're bugging, like, what the hell is Keith talking about? We go back the next year, and you ask kids, who's the best MC? And they say, Cool Keith.
He really did that.
Like, he's that kind of lunatic.
Yeah, and we got to get him up here soon, by the way. I'm going to jump into when I first became aware of Stetsasonic.
Okay.
What are you talking about?
You're about to find out. There you go.
What are you talking about, though?
You're about to see.
Would you please tell us about the group, the people are asking.
Of course we expect to win. Any self-respecting, intelligent person knows that this so-called band, Stetsasonic, and the rest of this hip-hop music is just a passing fad, which, one, is not creative, two, inspires violence.
Here they come in the white suits.
Encourages thievery in the form of sampling. No further questions, please.
Well, Listen, would you please tell us...
You on the radio talking about rap, saying all that about how they edited crap, Syph. Criticize our method of how we make records. You said it was an art, so now we're gonna rip you apart. Stop. Check it out, my man. This is the music of a hip-hop band. I mean, this is, Talking All That Jazz is one of the first rap songs I fell in love with. It's in the first batch of...
That's cool.
Five.
That's very cool.
With Strictly Business and, right. You know, Parents Just Don't Understand. And like that 1987, right, like that run right there. Now, first of all, let's start with the video, which I just pulled up here. You know the first thing on the screen in that video?
Yeah, it's a radio.
No, before that. Or is it just in the version that I'm watching right now?
The painter guy?
No, this starts out, and I don't know if it was in the original or if it was just on this thing, in memory of Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said.
Yeah,
that's the
painter guy, yeah. Rosenberg.
Yeah. Thank you, Syph.
Why?
Fat Five Freddy, not us. He was the director, and it was Freddy's idea. We didn't know.
We didn't know who Basquiat was.
Perfect. I mean, Syph, we're discussing this as to why that probably happened.
Yeah, we didn't know who Basquiat.
So he directed
the painter guy. Yo.
The painter guy was Basquiat, who of course Fat Five Freddy knew. You still know Fat Five Freddy?
Yes.
Will you help us get Fat Five Freddy?
I will,
because I've reached out a few times.
Yeah. He's hanging out with what's the boy's name over there? Ben Horowitz and them.
Have you, Syph? Do you know Fat Five Freddy?
He went for a Horowitz.
I met him a couple times.
See that, right?
Yeah, Horowitz. Yeah, I respect.
He went for a Horowitz. He's not answering your call, but he's hanging out with Ben Horowitz.
With Ben Horowitz. Yeah, I don't know Fat Five Freddy at all. So he directed that video. Wow, that's dope.
Yeah.
Now, where do you put this song in terms of the importance and belovedness of the Stetsasonic movement?
I mean, Talking About Like Jazz was pivotal. Me is probably a little different than everybody else because in my head, I never thought we could be on the radio. I knew we could be on Red Alert,
right?
Mr. Magic. Like, you know, that was cool. I never thought we could be on the radio, like the daytime radio.
Rotation.
Oh, and that record was?
And that record was the first record to actually break through. It hit the dance charts. It did all of that. And so I say it to young kids all the time, there's a middle ground. I didn't believe prior to Talking All That Jazz that there was a middle ground. I thought you was either over here or over there, and you got to do one or the other. And Talking All That Jazz kind of taught me, because we made the record for ourselves and for our own reasons, but it ended up getting on the radio.
Well, yeah, what was the impetus for that record? Because
it's pretty much the only Stet record that I wrote solely, like nobody else wrote it. I wrote it.
Wow.
It started off as an idea that Delight wanted to do this record about the correlation between jazz and hip-hop. And I was with it, and he wanted to use that sample, that Lonnie Liston Smith sample. And I was with it all the way up until hearing M. Toomey on Bob Slade's show talk about us creating this generation of non-creative musicians.
Shout out to Bob Slade, by the way.
Yeah. So then I came on the show, but Toomes wasn't there. And I went off on him, and then he came back on the show, and I wasn't there. He went off on me. So Talking About Jazz is a letter to M. Toomey, who happens to be one of my good friends now, but
as it always seems to be.
Yeah, I was going at him then.
And so you, and so it wasn't based on so much of like, I always wondered that, like a huge conversation that existed. I mean, but there was an undercurrent of this rap crap. It's not music. Yeah. It's this sampling can't be music.
Right.
So it was a response to that, but most specifically, M2ME.
Oh, yeah. It was that, it was a letter to M2ME.
And what it's also interesting when you talk about that middle ground, when you also see that, like, a lot of times there are songs that are really talking about something that make an impact.
Right. I've had arguments all the time because the 90s was a weird time for me. Because I started listening to music outside of New York. And so when I had an argument in the barbershop the other day, you know, just trying to make this kid listen to some
Daddy, oh, you still riding dirty in the barbershop?
Yeah, always.
He's still arguing in the barbershop.
Always.
100.
That's the best argument, man. So wait,
what were you trying to argue with him?
I was trying to say, yo, what do you have? Like, what do you New Yorkers have? Like, you're talking to, you know, and I'm a New Yorker, but I'm beating him up. Like, what do you New Yorkers have? You're talking about all of this stuff, but who's saying anything? Because let's be honest, you know, dope album, this first Wu-Tang album. They hardly said anything. Yeah, a little bit of cash, you know, Cream, get the money. You know, a little bit of Can It Be So Simple Then, but not, they're really not saying anything. There's no, you know, it's rhymes. It's, you know, the words make sense. There's some voices there. It's 7 or 8 of them. So they're going in and out, but in terms of just kind of holding true to story and content, I'd rather go to the Click, right? Or the second UGK record.
Now, what about Nas, though?
Nas is different because he came a little later. And even Nas, it took him a minute because it wasn't so story-ist largely, but he's such a great poet. That, you know, that's my, so my Syph, my Nas argument in the barbershop is who's the better poet, Nas or Tupac? Not rapper.
Poet.
Who's the better poet?
Because we know who the better rapper is.
We totally know who the better rapper is. But, you know what I'm saying? But who's the better, you know, Nas does something that I don't think we could do. Like, I'm not a poet. I'm not that guy. He is.
Yeah.
He really is.
And what about Biggie? Biggie did storytelling well. Biggie did it all pretty well.
It's going to take me about 7 more years to even tell you about it. I can't judge Big. I can judge that he was dope enough that he put out that small amount of material and made an impact.
Right. Huge impact. 24 years old when he passed.
But I have to, I got to keep going. You know, I got people that argue with me about Big and their top 10s and all of that. I got to keep studying the Big. And I worked with them, but I got to keep studying the Big stuff to really become that believer that he's that guy.
Are you listening to Kendrick?
I am.
Do you feel strongly?
I think Kendrick's a good 7, and we have no 10s.
You think Kendrick's good 7?
Yeah. We have no 10s.
I think Kendrick's a 10.
Well, you're saying
he's a 10 in 2016. That's what you're
saying. No, I think Kendrick will stand the test of time against anyone. I do.
You could be right, but we got a lot of time.
A lot of time.
Yeah, we got a lot of time.
But this body of work that he just put out, and last night he put out 8 more from the album.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just like what you just said about talking all that jazz made me think about Kendrick. The fact that in this moment, when everyone's selling and doing well by talking about nonsense, that Kendrick's able to mean this much while talking about some of the most serious stuff anyone's talked about going all the way back to Chuck.
Right.
You know, Kendrick's on it.
Right.
But that's a different conversation. Let's
So
talking all that jazz makes a big impact, makes the charts.
Right.
But Sally's the club banger.
Right.
Was that?
We always say that the difference between, say, that you look at the careers of maybe a Big Daddy Kane instead of Sonic or somebody else in that era that might have blew bigger than us was No Sally video. Because Tommy Boy was, you know, videos don't sell records.
No Sally video.
And they wouldn't give us a Sally. And we solidly believe as a full unit, all 7 of us, if we would have had a Sally video, we're talking a different group then.
You never did one?
Mm-mm. We might do one now. Like, I got this whole idea to just, like, I just talked to Pooba not too long ago. I said, yo, I want to shoot a video on Step to the Rear. It's like, Daddy, you're bigger now. And I'm like, yo, sit on the stoop, and we have a whole bunch going on in that stoop, people getting their hair braided, you know, helping the old lady with us, and you just sit there and do Step to the Rear.
But why Step to the Rear? Just because you love that song? Or you
just
because
I love
it?
That song, yeah. But I just think that there's these crazy, dope, classic rap records that have no video.
Please tell me when you shoot that, and I'll be there.
Okay.
I'll even help out. I'll PA.
Okay.
And also,
you'll be a grip.
If we could do, yeah, I'll PA. And then if we do Step to the Rear video, we could do one of those videos where like it splits, and then we do Who Could Get Busy Like This Man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's a really interesting thought, though, man, to have to do videos of songs that never.
That's amazing. That would be fire.
That's a really great concept. So
nowadays, the technology has caught up to where it's not so expensive. So it's not going to kill a budget, but it will be monumental as far as hip hop is concerned.
You know, and Syph, it's funny you mention that because you know what else proves how easy it is to take advantage of technology? Squarespace.com.
What?
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So like, for example, you wanted to build a website. We could build a whole website about these classic videos at squarespace.com. It would be super duper easy. Squarespace will hook you up if you want to make a blog. Syph, if you want to make a store. If you want to do a full-fledged website. Anything you want to do on the web, whatever presence you're looking to have, can all be done so easily with squarespace.com. And Syph, I don't know if you know this, we have a code there.
I did know that, but I want you to tell the people what it is.
The code is WANEPS.
WANEPS.
So if you're finally starting your website, your family member's finally getting their site off the ground, you want to help them get going, sign them up for Squarespace and set up their website, set up their store, whatever it is they want to do. Make your imprint with Squarespace and use the code WANEPS. You support the podcast and yourself. Squarespace.com. Use the code WANEPS. That's J-U-A-N-E-P, by the way. So where did this album... Where did In Full Gear take you guys? How far did that take you guys?
Pretty much as far as Stet has ever been, because it was our biggest record. Besides for the Africa record, which we didn't talk about.
No, we're going to go back to Africa because it came out first.
Yeah,
but I knew it after.
Now that was the first video, right? Because they didn't have to pay for it. Tommy Boy didn't have to pay for it. The Africa Fund paid for it. So the first Stetsasonic video technically is Africa. But we only got it because somebody did.
And did Africa become the video become a thing pre talking all that jazz?
Yes. Africa was an interesting record because if you notice, until the third album, you don't see it on any Stetsasonic albums. And the only reason it made the third album is because Norman Cook did that remix and it actually regenerated in London. So we stripped it on the album. Africa was a separate project.
Oh, it was alone.
Yeah, it was alone. It was all by itself. It was actually a study group, a study guide in schools. We worked with the Africa Fund. It was a powerful project.
Wow, I didn't know that it actually made it to schools, because that's how it always felt to me.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, the funniest thing is that the countries that you mentioned in the chorus of that song, I know those. I still, in my mind, associate them with that song. And like, as a kid, I'd never heard of Soweto.
Right.
I probably never heard of Zimbabwe.
Right.
Until the song Africa.
Right. Sean P told me that that's where that whole Botswana line comes from. When he said Botswana.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with him. He was just like, yo, I was listening to y'all. What y'all think, man? I was listening to y'all niggas, man. I was just like, Botswana.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah,
by the way, of course Sean P was sitting around just listening to some Stetsasonic.
Right.
And then starts a record with just the work. Just right. The bass comes in.
Exactly.
Botswana.
Right.
Syph, you sounded like you were about to say something.
No, sorry, it's a sidebar, but I'm realizing why Daddy O just dissed Wu-Tang because he's not in the Gravediggers. But we'll get into that.
All right, Syph. I'm I got answers, bro. I got answers.
He got the answers. So you guys do a big, did you end up on one of the big arena tours after that one?
So we did two. We did the two big ones was the Def Jam tour.
Yep.
And the Dope Jam tour.
Def Jam tour and the Dope tour. Do you remember who was on those?
So Def Jam was co-headlining Houdini and LL.
Okay.
Then the second tier was Dougie and Will Smith, and then Eric B and Rakim, and then Stetsasonic and Public Enemy as the openers.
Wow. What was that experience like, man, when you started stepping out on stages that big? It's an experience that this day a lot of people haven't had.
It's weird because we were always a stage band. So a lot of people ask us, you know, why are you guys a hip-hop band? And it was just because the practical element for us was we're making all this music with this stuff. What are we going to do on stage? Because, you know, back then it was hella expensive to press vinyl. Only Jam Master Jay was the only guy going to Europa Disc getting the instrumentals made for Run DMC. You know, so we were like, what are we going to do? You know, some cats was trying to cheat it when they put out their single. They put the TV track on the B-side. But, you know, what are we going to do? And we said, man, we just take it all out there. We take it all out there. We could do it exactly like we did in the studio. So that was what, you know, that was the whole inspiration behind being a band. It's like, if we bring all these guys out there, we could do whatever we want
to
do.
Now, were you able to make any money when you bring out that many people?
We made money after In Full Gear. It was no real money to be made. I can't say it wasn't, but we didn't make any money.
Right.
We didn't, you know, On Fire was just kind of, you know, the whatever to the wind to get the chops off.
And how many people ended up on the road with you guys total?
Usually the crew was, it was about 9 or 10 most of the time.
Total?
Yeah.
Including all you guys and
the
band?
Yeah, because we had two roadies that could do the job of like 6 guys.
Good for you. That's how you do it. That's how you save a little money afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we have to talk about. Well, and also, were any major friendships built on that tour?
For me, I mean, that's how Chuck and I got real close, which is why I'm here even. But Public Enemy and Stetson Sonic shared a bus.
Wow.
So Chuck loves saying out of this one bus came these 3 great records, which is true. Info Gear by Stetson Sonic, Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back by Public Enemy, and 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul, because Paul was writing that record on that tour.
While he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Was De La ever around at that point? Would he bring them around?
Yes. When we were in the studio, they was around a lot.
So your relationship with Chuck D goes back to then. That was the beginning. And you guys stayed close.
Oh, yeah.
All the way through.
All the way through.
By the way, speaking of which, did you see what did you think of Fight? Did you see Fight the Power being used at the Oscars?
I did.
What were your thoughts?
Check.
Check.
Yeah.
You're cool with the at least.
Yeah, I'm good with the check.
All right. So
the check.
How do we get to, how did you first hear about Self-Destruction?
Chris. So basically,
Lighty.
No. God bless it. There. Not Chris Lighty.
KRS-One.
The Latin Quarter story is an interesting story, and Stop the Violence comes out of that, right?
So
at the Latin Quarter, of course, there's great music, but there's also, you know, a great street element there too.
Of course.
Okay, so
yeah, that was you. That was the Brooklyn guys.
Okay. So you know, there's this one individual that comes in there with, you know, day job, but he wants to go to Canal Street and get the gold rope and all of that because he wants to blend in, and they rob him and they kill him.
Wow.
And then it's like, it's our fault. You know, hip-hop did that. And so Chris goes off. Like, his mind is like, what the hell are they saying? Like, they really saying we did this? And so he puts together this thing, gets with Ann Carly, he gets with Nelson George, and he gets with Bill Stephanie, and they put together the idea, and they kind of... It kind of called me, Chuck, a few of us first, and then basically just, you know, nobody said no, though.
By the way, Bill Stephanie works at my other job.
That's funny.
He works at ESPN Radio.
Wow.
And
when he first came up to me, he pulled me aside. He was like, I don't know if you know who I am. And I didn't, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning more and more. He was like, but I know what you do, and I'm Bill Stephanie, and I worked with a lot of people in hip-hop, and we should talk sometime. Yeah. So, Syph, we got to get him on here.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy that he works there.
Yeah, he's in like sales. He's in like the business side.
When you
get him high up though. Like he's a big thing at the station.
When you get him, tell him to bring the letter.
The letter.
Right. There's a letter he has framed.
Okay.
Because he offered BET Yo MTV Raps. And they said no.
Holy shit.
And they said no, and so he framed the letter. MTV
no.
took
wow.
it.
Wait, the letter The letter is the rejection letter
from BET.
Holy shit.
Tell him to bring the letter, man.
Wow. All right. We're going to have Bill Stephanie on soon. That's crazy. So they all get together and they start this Stop the Violence movement, mm-hmm. which was, we all knew was a KRS baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting, too. It's a thing that actually doesn't get talked about enough.
Right.
Putting the stamps on the album, it really became a thing. And KRS, to me at the time, seemed like the perfect guy.
Right.
You know, post Scott LaRock.
Mm-hmm.
It all made sense.
Right.
What was that video? Were you guys all together on the video suit for?
We were everybody but Public Enemy. Flavor was there,
which you can tell by the way.
You know, you see Chuck in the station, but Flavor was there with us. And then then there was some other interesting, like, you know, little bonus points. Like, if you notice, if you see me on the steps in Self-Destruction, mm-hmm. you see Tone Loc sitting next to me.
Wow.
Right? You watch the front of the self-destruction video, and when Light and them start turning around, you see Big Daddy Kane turn around.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, so there were people there that you didn't know was there. And then, I don't know if you've ever heard the story, I was there when it happened. LL Cool J wrote Light's rhyme for self-destruction.
Right. We've heard
that. So, you know, LL was there too. So it was camaraderie on a higher level than just those people you saw on the song.
I love hearing that Tone Loc was there because that bridges the gap between self-destruction and We're All in the Same Gang.
Right.
Because he was actually on that record.
Right.
How big, as an artist...
You know what? Self-destruction to me, the video self-destruction is like... You know that famous picture of all the jazz musicians in Harlem on the stoop?
Yes.
That's what self-destruction video is to me. Like, it's that painting but brought to life in hip-hop.
It was like...
That picture.
But it was like the true... You're right, Saif. That's well, really well put because it was like the moment... You know, don't even worry about the cause, which was great. But right. As a fan, it was like what you thought. Like, rap is like superheroes
right.
And they all came together right. In this moment.
Yeah. Right, right.
Little do I know, like, or can I understand that you're really all... I mean, mostly a bunch of young kids, like right. Artists just coming together and making right, a record. Right. To me, at the time, it's just like superheroes. Did the record feel like it made a big impact? How big was self-destruction from like an actual song standpoint? How big an impact did it feel like it made?
Oh, it felt like it was supposed to be. I mean, so you know what we're thinking, right? Hmm. We're thinking hip-hop, we are the world.
Of course.
Like, that's what we're right. thinking. And so I feel like we accomplished it. I mean, the only
was
thing...
Was it ever performed live? No. It couldn't be, right?
Get out of my head, Saif. This is what I was getting ready to say. So the only thing that bothered us, and especially Stat, because we got more real estate on that record than anybody else.
Right.
Is that we never got to perform it. A couple of years ago, I did the March to Selma, and I was with Dougie, Flavor, Light, and D-Nice, and we did it. But, you know, we only did our
part. You did those parts.
Right, yeah, and actually, the three of us are right behind each other.
Who?
Light, then me, and then D-Nice.
Oh, that's
so
crazy.
So we did it, that, and then, you know, Doug did his thing. But we never got a chance to... There was one performance at the Apollo, but it wasn't really... It wasn't
everybody.
And it wasn't that dope.
Why wasn't it just was
because
messy?
Because no practice. I mean, you can't perform without practice.
It's yeah, that horrible. Record, it would have to be practice. It's so, yeah. Like, the way people come in is so intricate.
Yeah, we should, I do artist development. So, I just would have brought everybody on one by one until we was
like,
all
you got to know who's going to hand the mic to the next person.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, right, it's got to be done. Now, hold on. Is anyone else not around anymore besides Miss Melody?
Heavy.
And Heavy. Mm-hmm. And besides that, everyone else around, right?
Everyone, yeah, everybody.
So if LL wrote and Kane was in the video, why weren't they just on the song?
Because those guys are sticklers for what they want to rap on. They thought the beat was corny.
No way.
But you can understand that, though.
I guess, but I think the beat's tight.
Dude, it's just that James Brown loop, and it really ain't that.
By the way, you can take...
What made it dope was when D-Nice started adding the extra parts, like when he did Steady, Flip the Talk, and all that jazz remix.
Now,
and,
those are the best
parts.
Those
are the parts that's what made it hard.
The horns for Heavy D.
Yeah.
Now, but for the sake of argument, with all due respect to the great Daddy-O Stet, if you say, oh, when you think about it, it was just a James Brown loop, that was half the songs we love from that era.
No, it's true, but that, I'm saying, to stand up for Kane and LL, it sounded like a Kid and Play record.
Okay.
And they wasn't
going to. And they weren't going to do that.
Listen to that record. It sounds like Kid and Play. You can hear Kid and Play right on that self-destructive record. Right away.
So then why didn't you put Kid and Play on it?
Yeah, why'd they get disrespected?
Oh, I didn't choose
the
people.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
I didn't choose the people on the record.
What? That Brooklyn Queens shit.
I wouldn't have put Kid and Play on the record.
But you would.
I didn't choose them.
But were rappers not fans of Kid and Play? Do they think they were too mainstream?
We liked Kid and Play. We remember that Rock Me Amadeus record they did way before they was Kid and Play. So we liked Kid and Play as a performance group. But then you always had the street tentacles. So those guys wasn't that. Those guys were more like, we're going to be performers. We're going to, but they wasn't guys that could hang out at the Latin Quarter, just hang. Play was. A lot of people don't know Play's history. Like, Play could. But
that wasn't Kid, though.
No, that wasn't Kid.
But they ended up, of course, in, you know, becoming such important, really overlooked characters in the history of the game.
Yeah.
For what they ended up doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's no...
I mean, we're all of it. I always say we're the whole kit and caboodle. You know, I often turn people on to a Busy Bee 1982 tape where he's saying, where the cocaine crew at? You know, everybody say blow. Because they act like, you know, there was a time that we all just had black, you know, black...
African medallions? Yeah, one of the most...
Yeah.
Here are the things that are made up about rap in retrospect. That the best underground songs were on the radio all day long. Never happened.
Right.
That rap used to be all positive and not about money, women, and cars.
Right.
All wrong. All of that's wrong.
It's all wrong.
But Self-Destruction was a moment where it felt really, really good.
Yeah.
So, we don't have that much longer, so I want to jump a little bit ahead
because
that's the pinnacle of the Stetsa era,
right?
And to what your production work and what you ended up doing afterwards. So take us forward into the Daddy-O career and to what you ended up doing.
It's real simple, and I really wish some of those tentacles existed today. You know, very tight-knit, not too many players in the game. Russell ended up being one of the big players in the game. He had Rush Artist Management, so some people that weren't signed to Def Jam, kind of a lot of us, because Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince were there, Houdini was signed to Jive, you know, we were signed to Tommy Boy. Russell takes us on, and then Lisa Cortez, who now is doing movies and stuff, was inside of Rush, and she comes up with this idea called RPM, which she says, look, we could take the producers that are in the group and make some money. So to take the Bomb Squad out of Public Enemy, Grandmaster D out of Houdini, me and Prince Paul out of Stet. And so, and at that time, the sound is getting hot. So that we end up working with like all of these people because they just want the sound.
So who did you start working with?
I took all the alternative stuff because I love alternative. So when the Chili Peppers came across the desk, I want that. You know, when the B-52s came across the desk, I want that. When Sonic Youth came across the desk, I want that. Like I was, you know... We used to do the, you know, sometimes people would act specifically. Sometimes they would just go to Rush Producers Management and say, hey, we want this stuff. And I was the guy that always said, hey, I want the alternative acts. The one I didn't get to work with that I would have worked with is the one I convinced Paul to do, which was Fine Young Cannibals.
Which is how De La Soul ended up on tour with Fine Young Cannibals, right?
He didn't want to do it. He was just like, I don't want to do it. I was like, Paul, you got to do it. It's to Fine Young Cannibals. Like, I know you've turned down, like, everything else that they've given you in that light.
But you knew that, you thought Fine Young Cannibals were dope? Like, it's not like a lot of people, like, I didn't know people knew.
It's not that I thought that they were dope, but I knew that they were going to be big. You can always see that, right?
With the aesthetic they had, the whole package.
So I was just like, do the record, man.
So what credits did you get for some of those groups that you just mentioned?
So remix and production, I work with quite a few R&B acts as well. I work with Mary J. Blige. I work with Jeffrey Osborne. I work with Barry White. So, you know what I'm saying? I kind of got used to producing, and then I'm not a one...
Trick pony.
Yeah, so I...
But what about the alternative ones? Which alternative ones did you work most closely with?
So I did Higher Ground. I did a whole another version of Higher Ground for the Chili Peppers.
Okay.
And then the B-52's Love Shack was probably the biggest record I worked on.
You helped produce
Love Shack.
The original Love
Shack.
Wait,
the original one?
No, the remix that they use most of the time now.
The one that usually hear.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the biggest financial gain from a record?
No. I think
I love asking people their biggest royalty check.
My biggest royalty check is talking all that jazz. I wrote it all.
Because you wrote the whole thing. What about the sample? How much did you have to give up? Or at the time, nothing?
The best shit in the world.
Oh,
so what happens is that...
Sorry.
Quiet.
So what happens is this. Tommy Boy says, you know, Tom Silverman says to me, look, or maybe it was Monica, I don't know. You got to call Lonnie Liston Smith. And they put Lonnie Liston Smith Jr. on the phone with me. And I said, what I owe you? He said, man, go ahead, Young Blood. That ain't even Expansions no more. Man, you can have that.
Come on.
Seriously. Like, seriously.
They just showed love.
Yeah, he just showed love.
And as a result, I mean, I love to overstate things, so stop me if I'm wrong. Is that decision for him to throw you that bone, That's a life-changing situation because they could have gotten a lot of publishing for that record.
I mean, he could have got at least half the record.
At least half?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and now as a result, you wrote the whole thing, and do you produce it as well fully?
I don't produce it. Delight's actually got the production credit, but
okay.
Most of the royalties come from the writing.
Right, so most of the writing. So you get a nice publishing check forever because of Talking All That Jazz.
Yeah, that's probably about my biggest one.
And it's pretty solid. Well, did you work with the Chili Peppers directly or you just did the remix?
No, I worked with them. Well, I did do the remix, but I worked with them. Like, it was so weird. Like, I meet Anthony and Flea, and, like, as soon as I walk up to them, they're like, what is heaven?
What is heaven?
What is heaven, Daddy? And then they start talking about how heaven is being in a tub, smoking a bone, listening to George Clinton. And then I do this whole layout, and then Flea is like, no, that's not right. Like, I got to play some extra bass. Like, they really cool musicians, though. Really cool guys.
And did you enjoy floating around in that world?
I did. I thought it was cool. You know, I didn't think it would last forever, which it didn't. I knew it was a time period where, like, yo, we're hot, so they kind of want to integrate this sound into it. But I wasn't anti. Like, you know, I was like, okay, cool, let's do it.
Did you have a relationship, speaking of that world, did you have a relationship with Rick Rubin?
Not really. I mean, in passing, yo, what's up? But we never worked together like that. You know, we talked about a couple of records when he would do stuff, but...
Well, it's interesting. You realize now that we learned this from... Syph, which Def Jam... which podcast was it where we learned that he cut out pretty early? I mean,
yeah, I think that was with Faith Newman.
It was Faith Newman, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, Rick, I'm becoming more and more fascinated. I get to know Rick Rubin better and better, and over the years I get to know Russell better and better.
Right.
I'm more and more fascinated that they ever were able to survive working together.
Yeah.
Like that they somehow came together personality-wise and lasted long enough to make it. And then the fact that I think since then, when you think about Russell and his yoga and stuff and everything he's trying to do,
right.
But he's always Russell, so it's a fight internally.
Right.
But I feel like Russell is mentally always trying to get to where Rick is.
I think so.
Right, too. This piece, right? Yeah, this piece that Rick has seemed to found.
Yeah.
Syph, did I tell you that when I went out there for the Grammys, my brother and I went to the studio, but when we went out to see Rick in Malibu, he was like, come by my house. And we'll drive over together. And we went into his house. Yo, his house, as you expect, is empty.
Really?
It's just like a big, wooden, beautiful, empty house with a beautiful piano.
Wow.
And like some places to sit and then glass everywhere overlooking the ocean. Like, that's it.
That's crazy.
And it's funny because you get the sense from Russell, he really wants to get there. Yeah. But I think Russell's dick prevents him from being able to
Russell
be fully
should
at
just
peace.
Be Russell. No, he should just be Russell.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a political thing for him. So,
well, I mean, I think I think his head is really busy, so he tries to calm down.
Yeah.
And he tries to find peace, but I think it's hard for him.
To eat at the pink teacup, Russell.
What is that, Russell?
That's the Russell that, you know, he eats a burger and fries.
pre-vegan Russell.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that, Russell.
Where can people find your music right now?
So I'm Professor Daddy-O all over the internet. And the imprint is Odad Truth Records, True School Entertainment. So you can pretty much, and I'm doing some pretty radical things nowadays.
And people can follow Professor Daddy-O.
Yep.
Straight everywhere. Through is the way
just
to find.
Like this, now, just everybody.
Now, Syph, you mentioned it earlier. Recipes to Poetic, the Grim Reaper, who went on to become the Grim Reaper.
Yes.
But Fruquan was in the group also.
Yeah, he was.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So Fruquan and Poetic both go into Grave Digger.
And right. Prince Paul.
And
Paul Prince Paul.
And RZA.
So Syph mentioned that joke earlier.
Right.
What were your thoughts on that?
I don't like horrorcore, so I didn't like it.
So
I was never into it. What was that, Russell's little nephew? They had that group on.
Flatliners?
Yeah.
Gravediggers were way better than Flatliners.
I mean, I guess you guys think so, but to me, I just heard the sickle and all of that. I'm a pro-religious guy, so I don't like horrorcore.
So it was just weird to you?
Yeah.
So you weren't able to separate and enjoy it musically?
But why? But why did RZA...
Yeah, do you know why they ended up in the group?
It's better to ask them. I have no idea.
Yeah, I guess Paul's the person.
I saw them sitting in a cafe. Where did... 54th Street and They were sitting in the cafe at 54th Street and 9th Avenue. I saw the three of them sitting down. Actually, it was the four of them sitting down. And I thought it was the strangest thing I had ever saw. You know, this is before the record had came out. I'm just, you know, I'm walking down the street like I'm always. And I see them, and, you know, I wave to everybody. I don't go in and say, what's up? I'm like, what the hell is Paul and Raekwon and Fuquan and Poetic doing there? But, you know, I didn't know that.
Well, why didn't you go in and say hi, though?
I mean, they was talking. I'm good. I don't be. Are you came out and said hi to me.
What's your relationship like then with the members of Sets of Sonic?
Oh, it's great. And we've been doing shows. We just did a huge show a few months ago at Lady B's birthday party, whatever the thing that she does in the summer. We killed it. Like, blew everybody out. Like, it's cool. We good.
Was there like? Is there like a Prince Rakim, Tommy Boy relationship that's how he knew all you guys?
Yeah, did you know him from Prince Rakim?
I met him. I didn't know him. I just met him. I don't know if maybe Paul kind of kicked it with him.
Right.
And you know what I'm saying? Like, you never know. Like, for instance, I gave an example. Wise and Eazy-E was super duper close.
Crazy.
You know, we do a friggin' show in Detroit, and they end up getting close, and from then on they're close. So you never know who's friends.
Right.
You know. Well, that's why we have to have this podcast, right? Because you got to dig around, exactly. Because the relationships are so random.
Yeah, it's super random.
That there's no way of figuring out. Cypher, you're on your way to work now?
I'm on my way to work, but tonight, Take It Personal, Daddy-O will be on that stage.
Very exciting. I know Cypher was he was geeked when I was like, the upside of us botching our schedule the other day is, you're like, Friday at 7:30. I was like, good news, Cypher. Daddy-O's free Friday at 7:30. Because I fucked up the podcast. Yo, thank you for doing this, man.
Hey, man, no problem, man.
Thank you for your amazing contributions to the game.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
They do not go unnoticed.
Thank you.
And I'm glad that, given your friendship with Chuck D, you wanted to do the podcast as opposed to going the other way and not want to do the podcast.
No, I like what you guys do, and I think that, and this is all at the sake of sounding real corny, but, I mean, it just never happens, and so this gives you the time to do something like that. Like, it's nothing you could do in the morning. It's nothing you could do on a you know, some drive show or whatever, but you have a podcast that you can actually dig deep, and I appreciate that.
No, it's fun. It's great to be able to have a platform, and the fact that now it's like a place where people actually get the content, like, absolutely, you're reaching a lot of people.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it for a long time now, coming up on 9 years of doing this.
That's what's up.
Yes, it's been a long time, bro. Daddy-O.
Daddy-O.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Daddy-O.
I will see you tonight, sir.
Thanks. All right, bro. Thank you. Juan Epp out. See you next week, bitch.